Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
The issues we need to tackle aren't partisan ones. In some cases, they aren't even political. At the top of that list, securing our water future.
Now with this last big area in central Arizona, we want to make sure that if and when growth takes those and when they sell, that there's sufficient water to not just do them, and thank you very much, but also whatever takes their place.
He was a naval pilot who flew combat missions in the first Gulf War. He was a NASA astronaut. Scientists and STEM professionals bring a unique perspective.
I'm proposing that we secure Arizona's future and prepare responsibly for the unexpected and the inevitable by bringing our rainy day fund to a record-breaking balance of $1 billion.
And with me to talk about Governor Ducey's State of the State address, what may be in his budget, and possible Democratic candidates for U.S. Senate are Chad Campbell of Strategies 360 and Emily Ryan of Copper State Consulting. Guys, welcome back.
Hi.
Thank you.
So, Emily, $1 billion in the rainy day fund at a time where it seems like maybe the state could spend. What do you make of that?
Right. Well, you know, I think that that is the makings of a good budget fight down at the Capitol. That's what I think of that. You know, it's a great goal to have. You know, we've been wanting as Republicans to build back up that rainy day fund and be in a more fiscally responsible position. But everyone knows when you've got a surplus in the budget, you spend the whole year fighting over how to spend it. If there's more money on the table, people have their items that they've been waiting to start spending on.
Good thing it's not an election year, huh, Chad?
Yeah, exactly.
It might be a long session, yeah.
I think putting money in the rainy day fund is a good idea. I think that's something that, you know, should have been done years ago. We would have avoided some of the cuts, at least, that we had to do during the recession. The big question is Governor Ducey putting rainy day fund money or putting money in the rainy day fund at the expense of spending any additional money on things? My guess is that's not going to be the case. We'll see that when the budget comes out. My guess is he's probably going to strike a balance between stockpiling some money in the fund, and then still increasing funding for education, some other things. But to Emily's point, there's still going to be a fight over this money on both sides, with Dems and Republicans. It's going to be interesting to see.
And not only a fight on how to spend it, but a fight on what to do with it.
Yep.
You know, if Arizona does the tax conformity issue and conforms to the federal standard, there's going to be money. Does that go in the rainy day fund? Or, as Senator Mesnard has advocated for, does that go back to taxpaying Arizonans? And that's going to be a big public fight as well.
Yeah, and, you know, again, from the Democratic perspective, my guess is the Dems down there will be advocating for that money to go to education or infrastructure, something like that. And I think that would be the best use of that money. Get that money in and put it on education.
Right. Now, and would that help fend off some sort of Red for Ed effort? I wouldn't expect to see what we saw last spring, but we could see something similar.
This is a tough one. You got me speechless, which is very rare. If something must be done to put something on the ballot, there has to be. We saw Sylvia Allen come out with her proposal, which would refer an increased 301, basically, sales tax to the ballot. That, arguably, with a lot of people, isn't still enough money. It also doesn't include kind of the P-20 conversation that's taking place now. But I do think everybody finally agrees, which is very rare, that something needs to be done with education spending. So my hope is that people can come together, the business community, Dems, Republicans, everybody, most of the education advocates, come up with a plan and get it on the ballot. Because the last thing we want is kind of a measure forced through at the end that isn't what really is sustainable for the future. That's the last thing we want to see.
Emily, does Governor Ducey lay down and say absolutely no revenue increase except maybe a sales tax increase to pay for K-12? That's been his stand has been, I want to cut taxes every year, mm-hmm. Definitely not raise them.
It would be hard to imagine him advocating for a tax increase. You know, I would assume he's got national ambitions, and that's not something you want to wear around your neck as a Republican.
Well, does he get in the way is the question then.
Oh, he very well may. I could see him stepping in and making a stand against something like that to save Arizonans from a tax increase. And right now, it's hard with so much money. If we're talking about putting $1 billion in the rainy day fund, how do you increase taxes on Arizonans?
But there have been a lot of people who've said that really because money's not going to fix it in and of itself, but in order to get the best ideas out there for K-12, you may be talking $2 billion, not $1 billion.
Yeah, I think the number probably is more around the $1.5 billion range. I think most people would agree on that. And I think, I mean, I could see Governor Ducey doing what Emily is saying, but on the flip side, based on what we just saw in the election results, you know, Democrats made huge gains. I think he has to do something. I don't think he'll advocate for a tax increase, but I think if there were to be a referral, he would let it go to the vote and kind of stay out of the fight. The question is, what does the referral look like? What is it actually funding? But I also, you know, again, if you have tax conformity, that's extra money. You also have gaming compact issues coming up. There's some other avenues of revenue here that aren't just tax increases that I think the governor's probably looking at.
And I would think before you see the governor or any Republican step out with a tax increase, expect to see a lot of polling outfits get hired to see how that resonates.
Yeah.
It's the Friday Newscap on KJZZ. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix with Emily Ryan and Chad Campbell. Now, Chad, let's talk a little bit about, I don't want to spend too much time on this because it was 4 days ago, but the governor was sort of credited by some for being pragmatic. He was also sort of taken to task by others by saying, where's the boldness? Where were the big ideas? Is this a governor who's not big on big ideas, or was he just saying, hey, we've got some major things to take care of, let's do it together?
I think he took a measured approach in his State of the State speech. I think really we'll see where his vision is when we see the budget. That's going to be that's the set of values that really put the rubber on the road, so to speak. You know, I think he came across as fairly bipartisan, again, pragmatic, talking about the water issue, education, some of those other big issues. And I commend him for that, and I also think he had to be because of the results of the election. But Governor Ducey, and I'm not saying this in a negative way or a positive way, he's always been more of a reactive, kind of measured governor and kind of keeps things close to the vest until he does them. You know, which was the exact opposite of Jan Brewer in many ways. So I think he's just a different style of governor than what we're used to here.
I agree with that. You know, I think those that criticize him for not giving a fiery State of the State address, you know, that's never been his style. He's a very controlled person. I think he clearly let us know what his priorities were for the state. And that's really what the speech is about. It's not really the State of the State. It's the governor's state of mind. And we know.
The thing that strikes me, though, is that he is one of the few who had a really nice margin of victory.
Yeah.
And I certainly get where you guys are coming from. Democrats won statewide office for the first time in a while. You've got now a 31-29 split in the House. So I get that. I'm certainly not expecting 40 minutes of fire and brimstone, but just a little bit of, hey, you know what? I'm still the guy who won by a lot. We've got new leadership. I've got a lot of power here.
Yeah, but he still has.
But he's not like that.
He's got a, yeah, he isn't. But he's also got a 31-29 split, and he's going to have to deal with that. And you know, at the end of the day, there are going to be deals cut with the Democrats this session. There is no way around that. He has a contingent in his caucus that's kind of on the far right wing of the party will not work with him on pragmatic solutions, be it school safety, education funding, whatever it is. He's going to have to work deals with Democrats in the House. It is what it is. And so he has to come out that way. There's just no other option for him, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's smart. It's smart. Okay. He's going to have to work with the 29 Democrats, to Chad's point. And you know, I applaud him for not spiking the football. You know, and he could have. He had a big victory. But he's leading as if he's everyone's governor.
So are moderates extinct? Or do we have someone like Heather Carter, for example, moving from the House to the Senate, who may make a difference? Kate Brophy McGee, on some issues, is considered to be a moderate. Is that going to affect things? Because people have talked about, well, will any Democrats move over to the Republican side on certain issues? Will Republicans move one way or the other? Do we see that happening? Do we see there being, or do we see a lot of 31-29 sorts of votes?
Oh, I think you're going to see moderates and you're going to see people influenced. You'll see Democrats move over and cut deals and leave their caucus to benefit their district. And you'll see Republicans do the same thing. I mean, that's just the nature of it. When things are that close, the positive thing about that is it keeps everyone on the extreme left and the extreme right on their best behavior because you're no longer fighting over who's the best Democrat and who's the best Republican. You're having to get a little more realistic about what's going on.
And you know, I go back to kind of when I was down there and we did Medicaid expansion with Governor Brewer. It was, you know, the Democratic caucus along with a handful of Republicans that passed that. I kind of see that scenario now kind of on the flip side. It could be a large group of Republicans with a handful of Democrats. It could be, you know, it could be the opposite. It could sometimes be a small group of Republicans with a lot of Democrats. Who knows? But I do want to say this. I think with the shutdown in D.C., with some of the federal and national mood we have around lack of action in the government, I think the voters of Arizona want to see people govern, and I'm hopeful that we can actually have some very pragmatic, constructive conversations this year across the aisle, work with the governor, and get some stuff done, because we do have some big-ticket items that have to get done this year.
Well, one of those big-ticket items is coming up in less than 2 weeks, which is that drought contingency plan situation. Let's talk about the politics behind that. Emily, Rusty Bowers has been in the legislature off and on for a very long time.
Yes.
He's Speaker of the House now. He wasn't real thrilled with sort of being given this deadline, the governor saying, well, he was almost feeling like the governor was calling for a rubber stamp to some extent. So where do the politics play in that, considering down to 13 days until something needs to be signed before the Bureau of Reclamation steps in? So is it good behavior? Is it almost like, okay, governor, we know this is important. By January 31st, we'll help out in exchange for something else.
I would not expect to see there be a deal made on something other than water.
So this is something so big, okay.
Right. There may be other things that come in. You know, everyone right now, since it's not baked yet, since there's still just drafts floating out there, all kinds of people are trying to get their last-minute request in and work that into the deal. So there's a lot of that going on in these final moments. But what Speaker Bowers is doing is something that we have not seen a lot of out of leadership, and it's something the Democrats have asked for a very long time, and it's let us read, let us digest, let us understand, let us talk about the actual words that we are going to be voting on, not overarching concepts. Let's be responsible about it. And for the first time in a very long time, we have someone who is insisting on that.
Okay. Yeah, and I think, you know, from the Democrat side of things, this will be interesting to see how this all works out over the next 2 weeks. If I'm the Democrats, I want to get a few concessions, but I also don't want to overplay my hand. I think you want to show the governor and some of your Republican colleagues that you're willing to work together, and you're not going to just, you know, you're not just going to blindly sign on anything. You got to have a few things here and there, but you got to be reasonable, I think, and that will set the stage maybe for further conversations into the session. So that's what I'm hopeful we see from the Dems and from the Republicans, but it'll be telling what happens in the next 2 weeks.
The one thing, Chad, let me start with you first on this. Should there have been a special session called, in the sense that now we've got a lot of new lawmakers in on such an important issue like this? I mean, would that have been, again, the governor won by so much. Could there have been a special session in December, or would people have just said, oh, we don't want to come, this is terrible, come on, it would have been too hard at that point? Do they need this hard deadline?
I can go both ways on this one. I do say this. I mean, from what I know, there were stakeholder meetings on this issue for most of the latter half of last year. I mean, there were a lot of stakeholder meetings with the ag community, business community, rural, urban, everybody. So there were a lot of conversations. Now, the language that, you know, is kind of being floated out there now, again, a lot of people hadn't seen it, to Speaker Bowers' point and to Charlene Fernandez, who's the minority leader's point. So I'm not sure if the special session would have actually solved that problem. And I also think that a lot of the new legislators, the new leadership teams, probably would have been unhappy if they would have tried to push something through with, you know, quote unquote, a lame duck legislature. That's my guess.
Emily?
I think a special session would have happened if it was at all possible.
Okay.
But you don't call a special session if you don't have the votes. So the votes weren't there. And so now we've got a new crop of people. Water is so detailed and so important and so critical to so many industries that, you know, it takes a lot to get a water deal through. And we may very well miss that January 30, you know, that deadline, kind of like sometimes we miss our fiscal budget deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And I predict that we may roll past that and the world will not end, but we'll get it done soon.
But briefly before the break, I guess coming back to just the idea of the special session, I get where you're coming from with that. But it does strike me that you've got, again, I keep thinking about this, so many new lawmakers, and they've already got so much to learn in such a short time. And then there's this enormous issue, one of the biggest the state has faced in a while.
Absolutely. But, you know, I guess my only pushback on that would be that the lawmakers, the outgoing lawmakers, probably didn't have a ton of experience in water either. It's been a long time since we've done something this massive in Arizona on something so important.
Yeah, I mean, too long. That's part of the problem.
Yeah.
So, again, you know, my gut, I'm gonna counter her prediction. I'm going to say that I think it does get done. And I think it will be telling into how it gets done and kind of a foreshadowing for the rest of session. We'll see here in the next couple of weeks. So
that's Chad Campbell. Also here is Emily Ryan. I'm Steve Goldstein. We're in the midst of the Friday newscap here on KJZZ. We continue after this. And the Friday Newscap continues here on 91.5 KJZZ. I'm Steve Goldstein in Phoenix with Emily Ryan of Copper State Consulting and Chad Campbell of Strategies 360. Now, guys, before we move away from state politics to Chad's favorite topic, the U.S. Senate race, let's talk a little bit about it. We talked about budget priorities a little bit. Chad, anything you expect to see, would be surprised if you didn't see this afternoon when we find out about Governor Ducey's proposal, something maybe fairly significant?
Again, I think there's going to be funding for education in there. I don't know what it's going to look like. I can't imagine it's not there, though. I can't imagine that he doesn't follow through on his, you know, 20 by 2020 commitment to the teachers. We'll see, though, the devil's in the details. And the big question is, I think that funding will be there, but then from the Democratic perspective also is, what kind of, you know, reforms will he be trying to put into there, and do they align with Democratic educational principles? And that's where I think you'll start to see all of these side conversations and these kind of coalitions forming down there for the next several months to figure out how to get an education budget passed that has bipartisan support.
Is that where the big bucks are going to be, Emily? Yeah.
Oh, I think so. And I would add to that the school safety counselors, resource officers. We're going to see a lot of emphasis on that as well.
When we talk about that, how much money could we potentially be seeing? We talked about his goal for the rainy day fund. I mean, are we talking hundreds of millions of dollars for K-12?
I think so. I think it would take that much to pull it off.
I would think so. And again, I think if, you know, from my perspective, fingers crossed, if he comes out and just says, let's do tax conformity, let's not monkey with it, and let's just take that money and put it in education, that's a big chunk of change right there.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts on that?
Oh, it is. You know, he's going to face some pushback from some Republican lawmakers again on not returning that money to Arizona taxpayers. And that's going to be a political debate that the public's going to watch play out.
And again, that's where the Dems can actually flex their muscle and hopefully flex their muscle in a smart way, though, to get something for education and get something with their principles, but not actually giving the far right too much power down there. That's the dynamic we're going to be
dealing with all session.
Yep.
So we're in January of 2019 now. Never too early to talk about the U.S. Senate race in 2020. So Martha McSally has the two-year term. We can talk about whether we expect her to see a challenge. We can talk about that at some point. But, Chad, let's go to the Democrats, because we know Grant Wood's changed parties with the idea of trying to follow in Senator McCain's footsteps. He said that's what inspired him to potentially run for this. Congressman Ruben Gallego has a built-in constituency, has been very critical of President Trump. Mark Kelly, former astronaut, husband of Gabby Giffords. So now we're hearing that Chuck Schumer is talking to all of them? Is that true?
Yeah, I think they're kind of – I think the DSCC, you know, the Democratic Senate Campaign Committee, they're kind of in there, I think, vetting or interview process, kind of looking at the candidates. You know, a lot of money flows through Schumer. We all know that, obviously. And, you know, who he kind of chooses, or if he chooses somebody to be kind of the DSCC's chosen one, is going to get a ton of support. And so I think they're all kind of, you know, lobbying – Schumer, and he's kind of vetting them, and it's like a job interview almost. And of course, it's up to the voters to decide at the end of the day. But in terms of that national money, they all want to get the quote unquote the DSCC stamp of approval here.
Emily, I understand I'm saying this to a Republican, but all three of those candidates seem fairly attractive, considering the Democrats until recently had struggled to find some really strong candidates. These three all sound like they're somewhat viable.
Yeah, well, and a couple of them are attractive to the Republican Party as well. I think we would love to see Ruben Gallego tapped. You know, Ruben is a smart, hardworking guy, you know, all the way back to being Councilman Nowakowski's chief of staff. You know, he is a political animal. I happen to think if he stayed in his congressional district, he could hold that seat as long as he wants it. You put Ruben in this race for U.S. Senator, that's a dream candidate, because Ruben is a hard left activist, and, you know, the hit pieces write themselves. So, you know, that's who the Republicans would love to see tapped. I think for that reason, he might not.
So you don't think there'd be a nice ad where he says, I'm independent, just like Arizona? You don't think he could pull that off?
Well, you know, to your point, in this last election, you know, that's only 2 years away. Yeah. We saw people run as hard right. We saw people run as nonpartisan moderates. No one ran as a Democrat, and that's what Ruben
is.
Well,
no one won. Ran as a far left candidate, I would say.
No one did.
They ran as Democrats, but they didn't run as far left. The people who did, like David
they
Garcia,
ran as party
got,
doesn't
got
matter.
Trounced,
yeah,
know?
Party
but,
doesn't matter.
But I would say, you know, and Ruben, I've known Ruben for years. Ruben was my assistant leader when I was the Democratic leader at the House. I mean, the one thing I will say about Ruben, he has really a track record of being a very progressive candidate. I agree. But he's also a military veteran. He's Harvard grad. I mean, he's got a lot of very good, strong attributes that will appeal to voters, just as Kelly does and Grant Woods, obviously, is a former Republican, will have that crossover appeal. But I would say, you know, I would say to Emily's, you know, argument that Ruben would be a dream come true, I would argue that. And I would say Ruben has a lot of strengths. They're different than Kelly. They're different than Grant Woods. But they're all very good candidates. And I'm excited to have three and possibly more very viable candidates already in the, you know, at least in the early stages of this campaign.
Emily, I cut you off. You said there were two candidates Republicans would be excited about running against. Who's the other one?
Well, you know, he was a scary candidate a few weeks ago, but Grant Woods, okay. You know, with his law enforcement background and his name ID and his civil personality. But, you know, lately in the last couple weeks, we've had some revealing tapes where he in his own voice disparaged women and namely overweight women. So, you know, I think that's going to be a hard face of the Democratic Party again. You know, all of a sudden he's looking more appealing to us as well because, you know, if you're going to go criticize President Trump for the way he speaks about women and you're doing the same thing, you know, not that appealing to us.
And I think, I mean, I think to Emily's point, I think that that stuff coming out, I mean, it's, you know, from a campaign standpoint, it's too early to tell. There's no polling. There's no, we don't know the numbers yet. But I agree with her. I mean, I think that's damaging in the primary, especially for him. That's a tough one to overcome. You know, in the general election, though, I mean, again, kind of taking your point, if the Republicans elect Donald Trump to president, I don't think they're going to, or they'll tolerate pretty much anybody at this point is how I look at it. But, and I say that facetiously, but I mean, I think Grant's comments are very, very damaging, and that's very tough for him.
Yeah, and we haven't heard the last of them. Those will be replayed over and over and over again if he runs.
See those in ads and whatnot.
Yes,
of course,
in his own voice.
So Mark Kelly at this point then.
Looking good.
Untouched by politics to some extent.
To some degree, yeah.
I'm really curious, Chad, about, first of all, we can talk about his pluses, which seem to be many. I mean, his bio is incredible. But he's never run for office and running for Senate the first time. I don't want to compare him to Richard Carmona, but he also had a great resume and ran a good campaign, but he was running against for an open seat. And I wonder if that affects things. What sort of chops would Mark Kelly have to have that certainly amazing courage being in the military and being an astronaut, but there's a different kind of courage being getting the slings and arrows on a campaign trail.
Yeah, but I mean, again, you know, if you can launch yourself into space, I figure you can launch yourself into politics pretty easily, right? So I see him being a very attractive candidate for many reasons, all the ones you listed. And I actually think not having, especially in this environment, not having the quote-unquote, you know, political career resume, not being a D.C. insider, is still something that a lot of voters will like. And if he can pivot on that and message that properly, it'll appeal to a broad section of voters, especially independents, who you have to get nowadays to win in Arizona. And to the comparison of Carmona, I agree, Carmona was an amazing candidate, but also Arizona was a different state. I mean, it's only a few years ago, but it was a very different state. I think we have a very different electorate and a very different mindset. And if Trump is still in office, which is highly questionable at this point possibly, in 2020 and running for re-election, I think that's going to motivate Democrats just as much as we were motivated this year.
Emily, Mark Kelly.
Yeah, Mark Kelly's a scarier candidate for us, I think. You know, if we will have a fighter pilot up against an astronaut and, you know, who's more all-American. And, you know, if Mark is as clean as he appears and is as well-spoken and rational as he appears to be, I think that that's going to be an appealing candidate.
So this is early, but let's say Mark Kelly were to get the nomination. Would the NRA be shy about going after him hard?
Oh, no, not at all. Mm-hmm.
And does that put Martha McSally then in a tough position considering Gabby Giffords?
It's going to be a really tough, tough issue. The NRA will go at him hard, and he's really got, you know, anyone that has a personal experience can speak with a lot more authority on a topic, and that's going to be hard to overcome.
Chad, what about that issue?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if Mark Kelly decides to run, if he becomes the nominee, I think this will become kind of ground zero on the NRA political map. Mm-hmm. It almost could be their last stand in some ways, honestly. And I think it's, you know, if I'm from the Republican base side, I think that's probably a good thing. You want the NRA here and you want them rallying the base. But I think from motivating Democrats, motivating left-leaning independents, I think that may actually backfire a little bit if the NRA comes in heavy, especially given some of the recent revelations about the NRA over the past year or so. I don't think the NRA has the political muscle that they had even just a year or two ago. I think their role is diminished, and I'm not sure they can recover to the point where they were just several years ago in terms of their political strength.
And guys, as we wrap up, Emily, do you think Gallego
Do you think, Kelly, do you think Woods all end up running for that nomination?
Oh, that's a lot. You know, I don't know Mr. Kelly. Mr. Woods and Mr. Gallego, those are some big egos.
You're calling
egos.
Them Mr. now, and yeah. Once during the campaign, you probably won't.
No. No. Well, no, I may still, but those are some big egos to tell either of them what they can or cannot do. You know, so it's going to come down to how realistic it is for them based on funding and support they get. Okay. But it's hard to tell those guys no.
More than one of them is going to run?
I think so.
Okay. Chad, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's really early to tell. I think they will all decide on their own terms. I think maybe there could be even a few other candidates who jump in.
Not yourself, though.
Who knows? Oh, no, not me. Okay. But, I mean, who knows? I mean, there could be some other outliers, excuse me. But I do think you'll probably have at least more than one of them running, if not all three. Okay. That's my guess.
Chad Campbell of Strategies 360 and Emily Ryan of Copper State Consulting. Guys, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.